Hello out there, and welcome to Work with Miles Okazaki, where I share a few things I've picked up over the years as a guitarist and composer in New York City. If you like what you hear, you could go over to Patreon and become a member for a very small fee and have access to video versions of all of these episodes and others that aren't included here. Download materials such as sheet music and exercises, and have the ability to ask me questions directly and request topics for new episodes. This program focuses on the guitar, but goes into many other areas, so there should be something for everyone. And the show starts now. All right, welcome back. You have made it to the end of the week. Congratulations, it's Friday. I'm coming to you from Brooklyn. And I'm having my coffee, and I'm getting started on the day here to sit down with the guitar. The guitar always is a reliable thing to go to, a place you can get lost in, even when life and politics and everything else is quite crazy. It has been kind of a crazy week, but the guitar will sustain you, you know? That's why we love to do it, I think, you know? It's just always brings joy and creativity and is endlessly fascinating to me. I've been doing this a long time, and every day I look at the guitar, I'm like, ooh, I'm excited about it, you know? So let's get into some questions from members. Mailbag episode. First question, this is just from yesterday. Juan Pablo Hernandez says, "Hi, Miles. Do you work on playing the chorales with the four voices as solo guitar? Really hard to navigate that at times. I wonder, what are your thoughts on that? Thanks." Okay, great question. And I did do some videos in the past where I, you know, did four voices at once on the guitar. The chorales that I've been doing on Sundays, I do one voice at a time and I layer them. And I do that because it's pretty easy, you know, for someone to play along. They could just read one voice at a time and not really have to work it out, you know. And I find that to be pretty rewarding, to just get a result really fast. And to also focus on how the chorales were taught by Bach to his students, or maybe, you know, if you had gone to a church service, you would just be reading your part, you know, so you would focus melodically on what's happening in each part, as opposed to like this chord and that chord and this chord, which isn't really, it's not really the focus of the chorales. The focus on the chorales is voice leading, how one voice moves against another. But, of course, it is very nice to be able to play all voices on guitar. So I will do a quick thing on how I might approach that. Let me open up the chorales to a random place. And, I've opened them up to chorale 160. You know what? I've done this chorale before, actually. I want to find one that I've never done. Okay. Let's do this chorale 206. This looks like it's in E minor. Yeah, E minor, and then it ends in E major. So I will post you can look below and you'll see a little image of this so that you can see what I'm talking about. So the first thing I'd do, either the soprano or the bass, but probably the soprano, because the soprano is like the tune that's being harmonized, you know. It's the original melody. Sorry, I'm just going to move this mic a little closer and tighten it up. There we go. So, the soprano. Okay. Now, there are many places where we could play this. You know. probably would not play it that far up, but where do we play it? Well, the answer is given to us by where's the bass. If I put the soprano and the bass together, the highest and the lowest voice, that tells me where I need to be on the guitar. So I'm always looking at the soprano and the bass because everything else is just in between those, you know. And so if I can get those two, I can probably get everything else. Now, I may have to make an adjustment here and there, but it's going to pretty reliably tell me where I need to be. Okay, so the first one, the first bass note is here. Now, I still have choices. That could be here or it could be here. I'm not going to play it here. This is too far. This is not right in the middle, so I'm going to start here. Now, am I going to do that? I don't think it's... That's too much of a stretch, right? So, what if I did it here? Oops. I don't really like that position leap, so I'll probably do it here. And get the C like this, you know. So I'm still in fifth position, everything, you know. Now it's an octave, a double octave. And the bass line then has this little eighth note thing. Oh, sorry. Okay, that seems manageable. A little secondary dominant action there. And nicely, I can play two open strings there for that. The end of the cadence. I'm just going to play the first phrase of this thing. Okay, are we cool with that? Let's see. Let me try and play it in time. I'm not going to agonize about the fingering yet because something still might change based on what's happening in the other voices. Now I can go really slow. I would recommend going very slow. One more time. Bar should have been a G in the melody instead of an F sharp. Need more coffee. Okay, so now I could go on and I could do like one more voice and then do four voices. I'm just going to go ahead and try and put all the voices together now and see if my voicings work. And what I'll do, like, also while I'm doing this is a little bit of like thinking about what's actually happening. You know, like, okay, I see this first thing. This is E minor. Now this is actually makes my fingering questionable. I don't really like this. This is hard to play. I mean, compared to this, this is really easy. So I'm going to change my fingering. I'm going to say, okay. I'm just going to start it with this open part here. And then I'll jump up. Happening here. This is a B minor. So now I can think about, instead of thinking about every individual thing, I can just think about kind of like chords. E minor, B minor. And then, now that's quite nice. Now it's hard to move that voice. I have to let go of this. Is there a way to keep this in here? Well, I could use the open G for one thing. but maybe here. But then, no good, because I kill my open G with the, but I could do it here. In a purist way, I guess I would like to do that, but it's quite difficult to grab. So the way I'm going to solve this problem is to go here. And then I come here. Now I'll go C, G, open, E, B. Now the G is open here. And I can come here, get that D sharp. I'm not going to worry about keeping the C ringing. It's not possible. So, in the bass, you see the C is a half note, but I can't really sustain it through there anyway. So I'm just going to grab this next part. So it's coming here, and I see that it's coming to like a B chord. Now this is too far, so I got to come here. Very typical, you know, guitar. Kind of bar chord, B power chord, right? And then it's going to go to like a B7. So I know that that's the next place I have to get. So I'm starting back at the beginning. Then I come here. Then I come here. Now, maybe I'll alter where I do this. Is that good? I'm thinking about coming to this B. If I do it here, it's quite a big jump. I have to make a decision about it. Let's see what feels better. Then I come here. Yeah, I gotta do this. You know what I'm gonna do? I'll just grab the E over here. Because I don't like the sound of changing. Well, now that I play it, I like it. Because then you hear this stays in the same area. Okay, so we could do that. So starting at the beginning, you see this is a slow process, right? So. This is why I don't do every video like this, because it really is slow. And then... Now I'll just grab this E minor up here. And then I see it goes here. No. Right, and then it goes here to like a D major. And then it comes back to E minor. And then I can use an open string, then to a C major. Now there's only one way to play this chord. It's diminished. It has to go there. I like it when there's only one way. It really cuts down your thinking time. Look at that. No fingers on the last chord. So I kind of rushed through that last part because I don't want to take forever to do this. But I'm doing it the way I'm, you know, if in real life I could. You can try to figure out the perfect fingering from the beginning, or you can just kind of wing it and then adjust. Well, I'm more of a tendency to do it that way. So start here. E minor to B minor. C major. B, B7. E minor. D, E minor. Moving bass. C. C sharp diminished to B. Okay. So Juan, that's how I would get into that. You know, that's how I would get into doing them with four voices. Start with soprano bass and then filling it in. You know, it's not rocket science, but it does take a little bit of patience. But it sounds quite nice once you get it together. Let's go to another question. So what else do we have here? I saw one. Sorry, I'm still trying to figure out how to, like, view questions on this thing. It's kind of a unwieldy app. There was a question about septuplets. Who had asked me that question? Sorry, give me 1 second. Talk amongst yourselves. Diego, maybe? Great series. No, Diego just said great series. Sorry. I think it was from someone called Soloist, if I remember correctly. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Soloist commented on... this is on a 7 against 4. This is from the Polyrhythm series. Hello, I enjoy your polyrhythm videos. I practice along with the videos. I think 4 against 7 is simple because I can just group the 16th notes into sets of 7. However, I felt that 7 against 4 cannot be played without the ability to accurately perform septuplets. Should this be practiced as entirely separate challenges? Is practicing septuplets a task for the future? Okay, great question. I thought this would come up, and I kind of avoided it in the whole series because it doesn't come up that often in, like, real, you know, practical situations. So what he's talking about, or she, is like practicing everything two ways. So when we practice 3 against 4. Switch the voice. I'm playing 3 on the top against 4 on the bottom, or the other way I was doing it was 3 in the bottom against 4 in the top. Do that, I'm feeling triplets. Now, if I want to do it the other way and feel the slower tempo as the primary, then I just feel it in 16th notes. See, I'm feeling this is the primary. Now I'm playing 4 against 3 instead of 3 against 4. Okay, so the question is, when you get into something like 7, okay, 4 against 7 is not too bad, right? You're just thinking. I'm sorry, I'm doing 7 against 4. Let me put the primary here. So when Soloist says, I'm just feeling 16th notes and grouping them as 7s, that's what's happening. You're feeling like, check it, 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 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Now what I did do for a number of years, about 10 years, is I practiced this drum with a teacher from South India. And they practice all of the subdivisions basically up to 9, you know, and equally as much. So those are all in the way that in Western music and whatever, and in jazz and popular music and stuff, we kind of deal with mostly duple and triple, you know, like 16th notes, 8th notes, and like triplets and stuff like that, sextuplets. Not a lot of 5s, not a lot of 7s, you know, and definitely not a lot of 9s. So, but I was very interested in getting more accurate in that. And I have another book that I wrote. I forgot about that. I'm going to put this up as an exercise book for practicing this type of thing. But for now, let's try to feel 7 inside of a beat. Now you can feel 7 a lot of different ways. Here I'm feeling it as 2-2-3. I could feel it. 2-3-2, or maybe 3-2-2. And hopefully eventually, after I practice those different ways of breaking up the beat, I don't always want to feel it the same way, because I want to be loose with it the same way I am with like 16th notes. You don't always feel 16th notes the same way, right? You can feel each part of the beat and accurately kind of find it, you know. So if I say, well, if I practice those kind of things enough and I just feel it as kind of like a, I'm actually feeling each one of those at that slow tempo, I'm feeling it like a bar instead of a beat. So I'm feeling like, it's like a bar of 7/8 or whatever. It's, you know, and as I speed it up, it starts to feel more like a beat. I want to be able to hit each part of the beat, you know. And so, I'm trying to sit there and feel each subdivision of that beat, you know, equally, so that I can really get into that groove without being too, you know, uptight about it. So, but really what's helped me is writing some music that's in septuplets. Now, if you listen, I could refer you to some of my recordings. There's a record called Generations that I wrote that starts with a thing that goes into septuplets. The melody of the first tune is in septuplets. There's some stuff on my first record, Mirror, in septuplets. There's a song on a Trickster album called Rise and Shine that's on an album called The Sky Below. That's also in septuplets. So over time, I've written a lot of stuff in septuplets because that makes me sort of find phrases as opposed to just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3. And just trying to like mathematically do it, I like to find phrases that I like. So I'll give you an example. Imagine this is a bass drum and a snare drum. Now, this is kind of hard to hear where the beat is on here, but this is, if I just did this continuously, you can hear that that's 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Right? And when I come and I have one more hit, this hit is actually a 5. 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Then it starts again. So it goes 6, 5, 6, 5, 6. Top. What's 6, 5, 6, 5, 6? Well, there's the 3 sixes make 18, And then the two fives make another 10. That gives you 28. That gives you four beats of seven. That ending is borrowed from I heard that somewhere on an Indian music record, on a South Indian music record, Trichy Sankaran or somebody like that. That's three nines. Boom, 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 bap, boom, 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 bap, boom, 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 bap, boom. Now, three nines is 27, not quite 28, right? So it doesn't quite fit into four bars, four beats of seven. But if you start it right after the beat, it does. And what's nice about it is that each time you come around a hit, one of the hits of that phrase will land on the downbeat. So it's very easy to play. Boom, 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 bap, bap, boom, 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 bap, bap, boom, 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 bap, bap. In fact, I could just loop that. One, two, three, four. Back to the groove. What I'll do is I'll give a little link. That's the groove to that song "Rise and Shine," and I'll also put a link to that in the notes for this episode. Okay, I think that's long enough now. I've taken enough of your Friday. Enjoy your weekend. Look for a Bach on Sunday. If you happen to be in New York City area, I'll be playing tomorrow night at a place called Bar Bayou in Brooklyn. That's with the great drummer Dan Weiss, vibraphonist Patty Brennan, and an amazing trumpet player named Peter Evans, a group that Dan put together, and we have a record coming out in the spring. So thanks again for joining me, and see you next time. Well, that's it for today's episode. I hope you found it useful for your personal work. This podcast was produced by Ed Gavitt, with the original source being a video on Patreon. If you'd like to see this video, head on over to Patreon and search for Work with Miles Okazaki. If you go through a browser and sign up as a member, it's a very small fee. And if you like the convenience of the iOS app, it's just a little bit more. In any case, as a member, you have access to categories such as exercises for the guitar, things to download, things to practice, guided practice sessions where I practice and you play along, a category called the Language of Jazz where I go through standards and famous solos, transcriptions, listening sessions, and also a complete series on every composition by Thelonious Monk as it might be played on the guitar. I do detailed demonstration of material from my book Fundamentals of Guitar, and have prepared special exercises and software even for members of the site. Every Sunday we sit down with some Bach, take a look at some violin sonatas, cello suites, inventions, well-tempered clavier, things like that. We work on sight reading, we work on listening, exercises to train your ear, exercises to train rhythmically off the instrument. And then as often as I can, I sit down and do a mailbag episode where I go through listener questions and answer them directly. We're having a lot of fun over there, and I really hope you can join us. And thanks for joining us today on this podcast version and for your support of creative music. See you next time.